I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Last Friday at New Vision United Methodist Church in North Philadelphia, Mayor Jim Kenney and Police Commissioner Richard Ross got an earful at a town hall meeting on stop and frisk. Candidate Kenney had campaigned on ending the practice, but once he became mayor, qualified his promise saying the pedestrian stops must follow the Constitution. Here's Reverend Gregory Holston.
And I was so proud when you said, it's ended, it's over. When I become mayor, it's done. I celebrated that day, and now you walk away from it. I'm upset as they are, just as upset when you walk away.
Mayor Kenney explained why he wanted to continue pedestrian stops as part of a police strategy.
In this room, obviously, there's a large group of people who would like to change the standard. And I hear them, and I respect their view. However, how do you gauge the entire community? Because there are folks who are living in neighborhoods who may not want that standard changed because they feel less safe.
Police can stop and frisk a person if they have a reasonable suspicion. The Philadelphia Police Department's practice of pedestrian stops has been monitored in the last few years because of a lawsuit. As part of the agreement, the ACLU issues annual reports about stop and frisk incidents, and their latest report has raised serious questions. 200,000 pedestrian stops last year. It found that one-third of the stops and more than 40% of the frisks did not meet the reasonable suspicion standard. About 70% of the stops involved African Americans. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is First Deputy Solicitor for the City of Philadelphia, Craig Straw. And Craig, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Mary Catherine Roper, Deputy Legal Director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. And Mary Catherine Roper, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Glad to be here, Marty.
Let me start with you, Craig, but I want to hear from you, Mary, which is there a difference between stop and frisk and pedestrian stops?
I believe that there's a general understanding that when you use the term stop and frisk, people believe that what that is sort of random stops by police officers without any reason whatsoever, where they sort of come up to you, say, put you up against a wall, pat you down, and say, go on your way. Pedestrian stop, and I think the term should be used interchangeably, but it's not.
No.
Pedestrian stops mean lawful constitutional stops, stops that are based on reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. Officers use it to investigate incidents. And I think what it is consistent with the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Terry v. Ohio, which was about 40-some years ago, that gave police officers this legitimate investigative tool.
And this is called reasonable suspicion, that if a police officer has reasonable suspicion about an individual, they can stop them and frisk them?
No, there's sort of two parts to it. One is a pedestrian stop, which is reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot, therefore they can do an investigation. The investigation is conversation, right? Talk to you, what are you doing here? What's going on? We got a call that showed that there was a robbery in the area. We think you might meet the description. Let me know. So they work on that. And then what happens next is there could be a lawful frisk. The frisk is sort of separate from the stop in that the frisk involves a reasonable belief that someone is armed and dangerous. You see a bulge on a pocket that could be consistent with a weapon. Then the officers, for their safety, can do a quick pat down. And that's not sort of an intrusive take parts of clothing off. It's a pat down of the outer garments.
Let me turn to you, Mary Catherine. And what's interesting, looking at this report from the ACLU, 200,000 pedestrian stops in Philadelphia. New York City last year, same year, 24,000 pedestrian stops. What's the takeaway from the ACLU report?
There are a number of takeaways. One is just simply that the city has not significantly improved its record on stop and frisk. We still have a third of stops without the officer identify. Again, we're going by what the officer says the reason for the stop
was. Because
these
are reports that come from the police department to the ACLU.
Exactly. And so based on what the officer says, there is not a constitutional basis for the stop. But what is far worse, in a way, is the racial analysis. When you look at the number of stops, and I'm not simply saying more African Americans are stopped. What I'm saying is when you compare how many African Americans are stopped compared to whites, when you take into consideration the population in the area where the stop is, when you take into consideration the age, when you take into consideration the crime rate, when you take into consideration the employment level in the area, you could take anything you'd like into consideration and you find a ridiculously higher rate of stops for African Americans than for whites. That is a really serious problem.
Well, let me pick up on that. I mean, are you saying that of these many thousands of stops and frisks, that most people end up being quote unquote innocent in that that bulge was a phone or a wallet?
Right. So you don't expect every stop to result in the discovery of criminal information, right, an arrest, right? You don't expect every stop to result in an arrest. What you do expect is a much higher percentage of the stops yielding any evidence of criminal activity. We've got less than 10% of these stops yield any kind of contraband, whether that's a gun, drugs, stolen goods, anything. When you've got so many stops and so little to show for it and so much racial disparity in it, at some point you've got to say, we don't need this many stops. New York doesn't need this many stops.
Does Philadelphia have a problem, Craig?
I mean, I think when you look at it statistically, and there's sort of an analysis that the city has done with a different statistician reviewing similar data and documentation that shows a somewhat different perspective, and that was raised in our last report that was done about a year ago, looking at 2014 data. So I think it's sort of statistically, it's a statistician's game, so to speak, that statisticians can make numbers appear however.
Dramatically, you think?
I don't know about dramatically. I think what we have seen is that Philadelphia, the driver for pedestrian stops is the violent crime, and it's the violent crime, violent street crime specifically. And when you look at that, and I think what's supportive of that is last week the police department, they publicized their open data set, the Police Data Initiative. And that initiative was allowed individuals, everyone, to access pedestrian stops and have an overlay of where they're occurring. And when you look at, you can sort of superimpose the two of them, you can see that where the violent street crime is predominantly happening is where predominantly pedestrian stops and frisks are happening. I think that data and the ability of the police department to release that and the willingness of them to release that has shown that, look, they want to work and have accountability. It allows people to see why we're doing stops and where they're being done. And I think what the police department is moving to, and I think that's what we're moving to on this, on the litigation side, is that we know accountability is now the most pressing issue. And we've addressed that with plaintiff's counsel. We've addressed that with the judge. And I think that's where we're moving to.
And I do want to pick up on that, but let me go back to you, Craig. Again, comparing New York and Philadelphia. 24,000 pedestrian stops in New York last year. Philadelphia, 200,000. What does that tell us?
Well, I think all of it is it's also based on what is New York doing now. And our understanding, and I'm not saying that data has been released to this, but I think Mary Catherine would probably agree with me, I think, from our discussions, is that New York has a dramatic increase in quality of life citations that are being issued. I.e., if someone is loitering, blocking, they get a citation now. And that doesn't count as a pedestrian stop. That counts as a citation. So then they have a fine against them. And I think we are not doing that here in Philadelphia. We are doing pedestrian investigations, and which is a sort of minor intrusion into someone's liberty interests. And then we say, you can go on your way. Issuing citation would cut down on the number of pedestrian stop forms that were being produced.
Well, I have to say, Mary Catherine is shaking her head, no way.
No. Every time that there is a stop, there may or may not be a citation issued. But in Philadelphia, you record the stop whether or not you're going to issue the citation. And in New York City, there has been an increase in the number of citations, but it's not equal to the decrease in number of stops. The stops came down from well over 600,000 to now under 30,000. There has not been 500,000 increase in citations. But putting that aside, what we are seeing in New York City is a different strategy for policing. And what we need in Philadelphia, I'm not saying we need the same strategy for policing. Whether or not you write a citation is a completely different matter. Whether or not you stop somebody, whether or not you stop people at the incredible volume that the last administration deliberately, campaigned. Right. Mayor Nutter came in, campaigned on, we're going to have very aggressive stop and frisk. And when
to deal with a rising crime rate.
That's what he said. I will say the crime rate has gone up. The crime rate has gone down. The stops do not change to accommodate that. The stops went up dramatically after Mayor Nutter came in. And as I said, sometimes we have a bad year in terms of shootings and violence. Sometimes we have better years. That hasn't changed the stop and frisk practice, and I don't think you can make a causal link between them.
Let me give Craig a chance to respond to that. Go ahead.
And look, I think when you're looking at New York and you're looking at Philadelphia, it's apples and oranges. New York is well behind Philadelphia in how they track this data. There's no dispute about that. New York has issues now where they've released in their report, the monitor's report, that they believe officers are doing undocumented stops. I think here
and not reporting them?
And not reporting them. So therefore, it wouldn't count as part of the numbers. In Philadelphia, the numbers haven't changed, but the data is there. We are collecting it. We have had a narrative form where officers have to describe exactly what it is that gives them reasonable suspicion to stop someone. They have to write that out. In New York, up until just recently, and they're doing a pilot program now, they just have check boxes. So why did you stop this person? I'll give you a constitutional reason. You check it. We've never done that. We ask the officers and require the officers to put down in their own words what the basis is. So I think you can't compare New York with Philadelphia, because if you do, it will show how much further ahead of this sort of issue with pedestrian stops we are.
Well, and we're almost having a break here, but are you saying, Craig, that if a third of the stops or 40% of the frisks don't meet this standard, are you saying that 200,000 stops is good for Philadelphia? That's an effective police tool.
I'm saying, yes, it's an effective police tool, but it should be done constitutionally. And that is what the new administration, what the new police commissioner is striving for. We've implemented some real changes that I think we'll get to talk about shortly that show that what we are trying to do is make sure that all stops are constitutional.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with both of our guests talking about stop and frisk pedestrian stops here in Philadelphia. The voice you just heard is Craig Straw, first deputy solicitor for the city of Philadelphia. Also with us, Mary Catherine Roper, deputy legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Mary Catherine Roper and also Craig Straw about stop and frisk pedestrian stops here in Philadelphia. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Mary Catherine, I want you to pick up on something that Craig said before the break about this overlay, that when you look at the incidence of stop and frisk, or perhaps the higher incidence, you see an overlay of certain neighborhoods in Philadelphia that are more high crime rate. There's more perhaps opportunity for a police officer to stop someone because there are potential crimes or even crimes that are happening on the street. Can you speak to that?
There's no question that the highest crime neighborhoods have the highest rates of stop and frisk. But look at even within those neighborhoods, African Americans are stopped far out of proportion to whites. So talking about the crime rates is basically saying we stop more African Americans because African Americans live in high crime neighborhoods. So even when you control for the population, you see that African Americans are stopped two, three, four, five times as often in neighborhoods where they live as to white people. And quite often, by the way, and this is all detailed, this isn't magic from the statisticians. You line up the number of stops, the percentage of stops by race, the percentage of population by race, and the crime rate in a particular area. And we've gone broken it down smaller than the district level to police service areas levels. Again and again and again, you see stops of African Americans that are not only disproportionate to the population, but are disproportionate to the crime rate.
And we should say it's about 69% you found, and I believe African Americans make up about 43% of the city. So you're saying there's a – that's off.
It's not – you don't want to look at the overall population. Look at it in area by area. Where the stops are most intense, they are – even more intense than that in terms of the African American population. And what we find is, first of all, fewer than 10% of these stops find any guns or any contraband of any kind. And when people are frisked, African Americans are actually less likely to be carrying contraband, but they are frisked far more often.
Well, let me go back to you, Craig, and I see some folks that want to join the conversation. People, or you have, and others have talked about, you know, the constitutionality of pedestrian stops. That people have a certain, their Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure, 14th Amendment rights, the treatment, equal treatment under the law. Can you say, based on this report and what's been happening in Philadelphia, that people who are stopped under stop and frisk are having their constitutional rights protected, that it's constitutional?
I mean, that's where we're striving for and what we want.
Are we there yet, though? Do you know?
I think the statistics show that we're not. I mean, I think what it shows is that we're working towards it. And I think with the new administration and the new commissioner, there's really some concerted efforts and priorities that have been placed here. But I can also say that if you look at systemic issues, and systemic issues would be people doing these 48A forms, the pedestrian stop forms, the officers filling them out and sort of not putting enough reason for the stop in there. If you just look at plaintiffs' audits over the five-year period that we've been doing them, I'm not saying that these are dramatic decreases, but when they started doing them in 2011, there was a 50% showing that the stops weren't supported by a constitutional basis.
Right.
The last report, 2015, has it down to 33%. So I'm not saying that that's sufficient or good. I can say from a systemic position, that is showing a decrease. And it shows a steady decrease over time. And I think a lot of it is because, and I give credit to the plaintiff's counsel in these cases with the ACLU and David Radofsky, like we have had a very good working relationship of trying to address what they see as the needs and what the police department see as the needs. And we've been able to come to an agreement almost wholeheartedly on all of those issues over the past 5 years. And we've gotten to the point where we all agree now accountability is the priority.
We've been talking about statistics and numbers, and these are all important. But I'm also thinking about a couple of the clips that we played from Friday night. And people were really angry. I mean, this has tapped into an anger and frustration in Philadelphia. I think it's true in other cities where stop and frisk has been either used or misused. Do you understand that anger, though?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an emotional issue, and it's charged. And there's no doubt from that meeting on Friday that that is an issue and that people have real pain and real issue with what's going on here. And the mayor, he was invited. He attended. He listened. He responded when given the opportunity. And I think that's what he sees as part of his job, was to listen to that.
Mary Catherine, you were there.
Yes. And people are very angry about this. And they're very angry about the lack of progress on this. I've not heard anyone say, improving your paperwork such that only one-third of the stops are facially unconstitutional as opposed to half of them. Improving the paperwork has not improved these people's lives. They are still being stopped and in many, many cases treated absolutely abusively during stops. And the numbers of stops are not falling. The experience of the community is not falling. And they don't see this as a crime-fighting tool. They don't see this improving their neighborhoods. And I'd suggest it's not.
Well, let me read an email from Adam, picking up on what you just said, Mary Catherine. He says, one thing I've never heard discussed is what an officer does or says when a stop is done and nothing is found. I think if there were standard practice for an officer to apologize for the intrusion when the stop finds no criminal activity, that this would go a long way to reducing the tension, I guess, between the community and the police police department or even police officers. And I wonder, Craig, I mean, this is a very personal, almost intimate interaction between an individual and a police department and a police officer. There's a kind of deference and politeness that should happen there. Is that happening?
I think the police department acknowledges that, and as part of their training now, they bring that into their training of the new officers and the old officers. They're trying to get that to be the environment for policing, is that a lot of these would not be issues if they were handled a little differently and with a little bit more tact. Mm-hmm. And I think that training is in place and has been ongoing. And I hope that we will help to see that increase sort of people's view of how community and police are working sort of together.
What I heard Mayor Kenney say, Mary Catherine, is that, yes, while this might be an issue, there are people in some of these high crime areas that they want stop and frisk. And some of them complain. I'm just quoting what I heard the mayor say, but also in some of the research that I did, some of the complaints is that police don't respond quickly enough to things that happen in neighborhoods, so that people on the other side often feel, well, we're being ignored by our own police department.
What I heard Mayor Kenney say is that he doesn't know if there are other people who want stop and frisk. There's no question that people sometimes find the police non-responsive. And one of the reasons for that is that they are busy putting up their numbers with arrests and stops. One of the problems and one of the reasons that stop and frisk is out of control is that police officers are judged in part on their productivity. I'm not talking about quotas,
right,
except in a couple of places we've heard about, but part of what they get judged on is productivity, and this is a number that they are reviewed on, whereas they don't get the same kind of credit for a service call. And we've heard complaints directly from police officers about that.
You want to respond to that, and we'll get some callers in. Go ahead, Craig.
I think it's obvious that there are communities who want to see more police in their neighborhoods. They want the police to be more active. I think that is part of watching some of the clips from that meeting, and you see people leaving and people having discussion with the media as they were leaving. They were saying like that they were there to try to see how they could increase police presence in their neighborhoods, and I think that was obvious. So I think Mayor Kenney's comments were correct there. I also think that the fact that pedestrian stops need to occur, it gives the police the ability to investigate crimes. Nobody wants to take that away from a police department. Otherwise, what state would we be in? Mm-hmm. The only time that an officer could stop somebody was if they knew a crime had already been committed or was in the process of being committed. And therefore, you would take away the whole investigation process from the police department. So I think that the police department recognize that and know that they need to have this tool.
Do you agree with that? I mean, this goes back to a Supreme Court decision about reasonable suspicion.
I would say there are plenty of people who would like to take this tool away from the Philadelphia Police Department in particular. And their explanation is it has been consistently misused by the department. So take it away until they can learn how to do it properly, or at least alter significantly the standard that police are using. I understand those arguments entirely, because these are people who have lived under what they view as a state of siege for years and years and years. And when they say they want more police in their neighborhoods, nobody is asking for more stop and frisk. What they are asking for is police who are responsive to community complaints, police in the neighborhood asking people what is going on. That is community policing.
And that is Mary Catherine Roper, Deputy Legal Director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Also with us is Craig Straw. He's the first Deputy Solicitor for the City of Philadelphia. And we are talking about stop and frisk. I should just do a quick little recap here. A couple of years ago, the Philadelphia Police Department was sued by the ACLU for a, quote, history of racially biased policing. An agreement was reached in 2011. The department began sharing data on pedestrian stops with the ACLU, and their most recent report found that there were something like 200,000 pedestrian stops in 2015, and a number of them, a sizable number of them, did not meet the standard of reasonable suspicion. Also, about 69% of the stops involved African Americans, and we are taking a critical look at stop and frisk, also called pedestrian stops. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Charles from Southwest Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Charles. Go ahead. Hi. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. One thing that I wanted to point out, I think both your guests are missing, that there's a racial history, there's a history, historical history to this. After the Emancipation Proclamation was passed, slaves were arrested by the thousands because they didn't have jobs, and a lot of southern states institute those kind of vagrancy laws to arrest those slaves. And I have to disagree with Craig that it's an emotional issue. This is still a racial issue, and it has to be addressed from that standpoint. And I'll take my response.
Charles, thanks for the call to Radio Times. There is some racial history here, is there not, Craig, or no?
I mean, I think we all know that there. I wasn't saying that because the meeting was emotional, there wasn't racial issues that were being addressed there. That wasn't what I meant to say, or what I was saying. I think we know that we are looking at those issues. We have been studying those issues. We have been working with plaintiffs' counsel to try to find ways to address those issues. I think the police department, through training, through what they are now doing as far as accountability measures, and to talk about some of that. The accountability measures that they're doing. The police commissioner, the new police commissioner, Richard Ross, when he came in, made the pedestrian stop and the statistics and the information regarding those part of his CompStat meeting, which is the meeting where he has with high-level police officials, with the commanders and the captains in a lower level coming in and presenting their information. And it puts right in front of the commissioner and these high-level superiors the issues of pedestrian stops. So everyone is on high alert that this is a priority of the police commissioner, and he is looking to address this through accountability measures.
Mary Catherine, is this a matter of training? I mean, is it a matter of training police officers so they know how to do this constitutionally?
No, all of the new training and new directives were in place before the first part of 2015, which is addressed in our last report. What is new is this accountability from the top down. And that is absolutely a new measure by Commissioner Ross. He's going to hold the captains accountable for the statistics. But I have to say, all that holds them accountable for is the paperwork. Improving how police officers document their stops is not the only issue here. The experience of people in these neighborhoods does not improve because the paperwork improves.
Let me get Bishop Dwayne Royster to join our conversation. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, Executive Director of Power. Bishop Royster, nice to have you with us on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Marty. I appreciate
sure.
the opportunity
no problem.
To be on the air. And Mary Catherine, thank you for coming on Friday night to the town hall. The town hall meeting that's being discussed at this time was actually hosted by Power and TechBook Online. That was held at the New Vision United Methodist Church, where the Reverend Greg Holston is the senior pastor. And we held this forum because stop and frisk is an issue that Power has been working on over the last couple of years. We've actually been in dialogue with ACLU and other organizations around the city because we recognize that this policy, the way it has been enacted under the Nutter administration with Commissioner Ramsey, has deep racial implications. I do have to say, Craig, I was a little disappointed when you said that a police stop is a minor intrusion, because a lot of the people that we have talked to have seen it as a very traumatic experience with the Philadelphia Police Department, often full of disrespect and anguish and pain. We believe that this policy must end. that Mayor Kenney ran on a platform where he was very clear just about everywhere he spoke that he was going to end stop and frisk. The fact that he has backtracked on that at this point in time has been very disappointing to many in the African-American community who voted for him despite the fact that he was not African-American. We see this as a very disappointing that we have heard some things coming out of the administration around this issue to sort of make it a minor pain for people of color in the city of Philadelphia, and we don't think that is the case.
You know, Bishop Royster, only because about a minute before our break here, and I do want to give Craig Straw a chance to respond to some of the comments that you made. Craig, go ahead.
I guess specifically when I said a minor intrusion, I was meaning if the stop is done constitutionally and with the sort of tact that we're striving for, it should be a minor intrusion. And I was not categorizing every stop that's ever been done in the city as being a minor intrusion. So just for clarification, that's sort of what I was – part of my comment was based on that. And I guess that's –
Right, but what I and thank you. I'm sorry to do that to you, Bishop Royster, only because we're up in a break here. But what he's saying is that many of these stops are mishandled, and people feel in some way, I won't say abused, but certainly feel as if their rights were not protected.
And that's where I talked about the training and the fact that the higher ups in the police department are now aware, and they have been aware, but they're working on now trying to find strategies to address that. And that's through the accountability measures, making people accountable for their actions. And that's what the police department are in the process of doing at this time.
Bishop Royster, thanks for calling into Radio Times, Executive Director of Power. And we are talking about stop and frisk here in Philadelphia. A lot of people want to join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Our guests are Craig Straw and Mary Catherine Roper. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Excuse me, talking with Mary Catherine Roper, Deputy Legal Director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, and also Craig Straw, First Deputy Solicitor for the City of Philadelphia. We've got a lot of callers here at 1-888-477-9499. Mary Catherine, I mean, is there a goal? Is there a number? I don't want to keep going back to numbers here, but is there, you know, 100,000 stops or 50,000 stops, or out of all these stops, you get a predominantly number of people who get arrested for carrying an illegal weapon or things like that. Do you have a goal in mind?
No, we don't have a numeric goal for the right number of stops for Philadelphia. We think it could be far less. And frankly, the goal is not reached until we see a complete, you know, absence of these racial disparities that have been so clear for so long. And I got to tell you, for people in the community, right, I'm talking from the legal perspective, for people in the community, the goal is not reached until they have a different relationship with the police in their communities.
And that as a kind of policing tool, that's community policing or what it's supposed to be.
Right, that they do not experience these stops as intrusion and harassment, that they do not see these stops as, frankly, a continuation of a very racist history that goes back a very long way, not only in Philadelphia, but in policing across this country.
Well, let me pick up on that, Craig, and then we'll get back to some of our callers here, which is that if the community feels that this is being misused and they've been targeted by stop and frisk, does that mean that either it's a practice that doesn't result in the kind of relationship that police departments or the city is looking for in communities and needs to be amended that way?
I think it's a technique that's used by the police department. It's not their overarching technique for crime fighting in the city of Philadelphia. As part of that, you'll see that, yes, they need to do a better job with the community and the community relations portion of this. And I think, but they also do, as I said, there's always two sides to every coin, and that can be that you also get the commissioner being contacted by numerous groups saying, you need to have more presence out here, you need to come out here, we need you in our neighborhoods. So he is balancing both of those at one time. And I think he's been doing a very good job in a very short period of time. And one point where I will stress that he has shown an ability to want to put this issue as a priority is when we met with Judge Dalzell in federal court regarding this in March, on March 22nd. Police Commissioner Ross, of his own initiative, asked Judge Dalzell to call them back in September of this year, once the data for the first two quarters comes out. And what what Commissioner Ross asked was, I will bring, if there is a person, a captain, a commanding officer who is a repeat offender, so to speak, in having deficient stops, I'll bring him with me, him or her. And they will have to explain to the judge what it is that is causing their numbers to be deficient. So I think that that move by Commissioner Ross really shows the priority that he's placing here. And to say to a federal judge, call me back, please. I want you to have this.
Do you have the same kind of confidence, Mary Catherine?
I have the same. I have a lot of respect for Commissioner Ross's attention to his responsibility and the new accountability measures that he is putting in place. I just have to repeat, the only thing those accountability measures will address is the quality of the paperwork. Mm. They don't measure the manner in which the stop is conducted. They don't address the racial disparities. The only thing they address is whether the police officer is filling out the forms properly. We don't currently have a way of measuring how people are treated during stops. And I think that the department, if it's really going to take that seriously, ought to find a way.
But how would you do, unless you had someone standing next to the police officer, how would you know?
Well, body cameras are a terrific tool, right? You don't have to review. You're not going to review all of the footage from an officer, but if for training and in quality improvement purposes, you just look and see how an officer interacts with people on a daily basis, you may indeed find habits that we all know are ingrained in the Philadelphia police that need correction.
You see body cameras the same way? Then we'll get to our callers.
Yes, absolutely. I think body cameras and the use of them and the increase in numbers of them being used in Philadelphia, you're going to see increase over time. I think the pilot program in the 22nd District is panning out to be an effective tool, and that's what's going to be used. But to talk about how do you find out, how do you track sort of these incidents where people aren't treated properly, any individual can go to and file an internal affairs complaint, a complaint against police for the way that they were treated. They can go to their local police district, get the paperwork there, fill it out and say, this officer treated me this way. And they file that complaint, and that complaint goes on record, and that's the record on as to that police officer. And it requires internal affairs then to do an investigation. So there is a way to track this type of activity if the officers are treating individuals with such disrespect.
And if people trust the system.
Absolutely. I agree. It is relying on the system.
Let me get Councilwoman Helen Gim to join our conversation. Helen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question had to do a little bit with what Ms. Roper was talking about in terms of how you address policies at the top. And one of the areas is around civil forfeiture. And the question of how stop and frisk and civil forfeiture may be related, that's the claiming of property during any kind of a stop that isn't related to whether or not the individual is convicted of a crime. Would changing civil forfeiture laws or policies help address some of the issues that you're seeing from the ACLU and could the city solicitor weigh in terms of legalities around that?
That's interesting. I didn't even think of that. And can I, I'm not sure who, to, should I look, I'm looking at you, Mary Catherine, go ahead.
So the problems with civil asset forfeiture and the seizure of cash mostly from thousands and thousands of Philadelphians every year is a very serious issue. And it overlaps to some extent, you're correct, Councilwoman, with stop and frisk, but not to a large extent. Most of the cash seizures come from arrests, even if quite often charges are not pressed, but there is an arrest. There's a definite need to reform that system as well.
You want to add anything to that?
I just think I would stress that the pedestrian stop doesn't sort of rise to the level of where forfeitures are occurring. It is more consistent with what Mary Catherine said in regards to arrests.
Helen Gim, thanks for the call. Let me see what Bob from Swarthmore has to say. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to, first of all, say this is a really important discussion. I want to thank the two people who you have as guests,
great,
Mary Catherine and Craig. But it's also a matter for community organizations. Neighborhood councils ought to be part of this process. How many citizens know what are the constitutional requirements for a stop or a stop and frisk? I would venture to say nobody. Having to go to your police department to fill out a form is not really something that people will have a great deal of confidence in. It would be better if the City of Philadelphia Police Department had a website that ordinary citizens could appeal to,
well,
and
Bob,
describe their experience.
Sure. Let me take your comment. I guess I'm back to you, Craig.
Yeah, I think at the meeting on Friday, I think Calvin Anderson, who's in charge of the PAC, the Police Advisory Commission, I think he stated that he wanted to see more community groups be organized and be sort of be the conduit for these types of issues. So I think it was his comments that were made in regard to that, and I would agree with them.
Would you agree, Mary Catherine, with what Bob said, which is that who knows what our constitutional – I mean, unless you're a lawyer or maybe a constitutional lawyer, do we as citizens know what our rights are when we're walking the streets?
Well, the power organization sure does, the ones that organize that town hall. I don't think – I mean, I think community organizing is great, but what I want to point out is the community is already organized around this. They talked to candidate Kenny. They got commitments from candidate Kenny. And at the town hall on Friday night, that clip you opened with Reverend Holston saying to Mayor Kenny, you didn't do what you promised to us. And they are fully aware of the legal implications. Their demand is to do stops only on the basis of probable cause rather than on the basis of reasonable suspicion. So yes, I'm all for community education, but I want to tell you, it's already happening in Philadelphia.
Well, and we don't have Mayor Kenny to explain what he said on the campaign trail and what he means as mayor, but go ahead, Greg.
From the town meeting and from what Mayor Kenny's position was there at the committee was that he released a policy paper back in March of 2015 when he was running, and the word was lawful stop and arrest and unlawful stop and arrest. So it was not stop and frisk. It was lawful, unlawful, and goes into the definition of pedestrian stop versus sort of the general belief that stop and frisk means the unconstitutional.
And I'm also looking at a quote from candidate Kenny. This was last April. He says, if I'm mayor, stop and frisk will end in Philadelphia, comma, no question. So, I mean, part of it is, and part of why we want to do the show is to sort of, what are we talking about here and what is constitutional and what isn't? Let me get, looks like Bernie from East Kensington to join us. Hi, Bernie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a comment and a question.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Go ahead.
I have a comment and a question for Mary Catherine Roper. I live in East Kensington, and I'm a licensed ham radio hobbyist who legally monitors police radio communications in my spare time. I am amazed by the high number of so-called ped stops I hear called in by police officers across the city. It seems like every minute or two I hear one on the air. Rarely do I hear on police radio of an arrest resulting from a ped stop. So it seems to me like far less than the reported, 11% of ped stops I hear on police radio actually result in arrests. So I wonder if all these reported ped stop statistics are being accurately reported and if the true number is even higher. So I'd like to ask Mary Catherine Roper,
I think you did,
if police radio traffic is being recorded and audited to see if it matches up with a number of officially reported ped stops, or are police department statistics being taken for granted as accurate?
Bernie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. He's wondering whether it's more than 200,000.
Well, I'll tell you, we're wondering the same thing. And not to sort of hijack this, but we have a phone app, the mobile justice app, that we encourage people to use to report to us when they've been stopped by the police, specifically because we think there are a large number of stops that are not being recorded. We are certain that there are a large number of frisks that are not being recorded, in part because when you see a stop form that says stopped a man because we thought he might be somebody carrying a weapon, and you don't see a frisk, that is beyond credulity.
That doesn't hold up.
And it doesn't, right. Of course, they're going to frisk somebody who is stopped for suspicion of a weapon. They ought to frisk somebody if they have reason to stop that person for suspicion of carrying a weapon. So, you know, all of the talk we're talking about, right, about improving the paperwork doesn't, that's still the first step. Getting down to the actual practice on the street, we aren't even there yet.
There's some themes that I hear we've been talking about, Craig. I mean, what Mary Catherine is saying, and perhaps cameras, as you mentioned, both of you mentioned earlier, perhaps this will give some of that information about, was the police officer respectful? Was the person being stopped, were they abusive? I mean, it can go both ways, it seems to me.
Yeah, and I think what you have is you have a police department that's very willing to put in the time and energy to, number one, get the data, ensure the data is good, to have the training in place. And I don't think anybody has ever disputed that when you look at the types of training that we are doing, that the police department are in the process of doing and have been doing for quite some time now, that the plaintiffs have seen that what that training is, and they agree that that's the type of training that officers need. Again, you're impacting systemic issues and sort of a history that you have to try to evolve into. And that's what the police department is doing. And all of these measures, through the training, through the accountability, it's all in an attempt to get to that. And I sort of disagree with the fact that you think officers are there not filling out these forms, just doing unreported stops, because it is clear that since this case was brought, the numbers haven't dropped. Like, it hasn't been an issue where all of a sudden pedestrian stop numbers have dropped dramatically just because there was a lawsuit filed. The numbers have stayed pretty stable, and it's the quality of those stops that we're concerned about. Yeah. And that's what we need to address.
We're almost out of time here. Mary Catherine, you want to say anything in response to that? Or any final words for our listeners?
The final words are the same ones that we have been saying for the 5 years that we've been in this litigation. This practice, which is demonstrably unconstitutional, as it is practiced by the Philadelphia police, demonstrably racially disproportionate and injurious to the African-American and other communities, this practice needs a radical change.
You think that's possible in Philadelphia?
Of course it's possible, right? I mean, the number of stops increased. It can decrease. Police officers are very they are people who follow orders, right? They are people who do what is communicated to them that they need to do and what they are going to be evaluated on, because they care very much. It's a very hierarchical thing. What we have been lacking is leadership. I think Commissioner Ross is a much stronger leader. The question is whether he has the right goals.
Final word to you, Craig Shaw. Almost out of time here.
I think it's clear Commissioner Ross has accountability as being the goal. And I think what he has done, and through the manners in which he is seeking to do accountability, that they're unheralded in police forces. And this is sort of Philadelphia being on the forefront of these issues. And I don't think anybody can take any issue with that, that's what Commissioner Ross wants to see happen and continue to happen.
Well, to be continued. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Craig Straw, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Marty. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. And he's First Deputy Solicitor for the City of Philadelphia. Mary Catherine Roper, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Deputy Legal Director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. And thanks for your comments and your calls. 1-888. No, I shouldn't do that because we don't want to hear any more of those. We're going to shift gears after this very short break. Stay with us. I'm a robot. We'll be right back.